Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight we are live. This is May the 18th, year 2012. You see, that's the only way you know if I'm live or not is when I give the date, because when we're traveling, they'd use the archive shows. But we are live tonight, and we have a guest. Let me give out the toll-free number before we begin. And this toll-free number is for anyone who wants to call in, and it's good all over the world. So the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. Okay, and from now until July, all of my guests are going to be the authors and the speakers that we're going to have for our conference. You know, in July, the dates are 13th to the 15th of July, that weekend. And Julia's here, too. She's back from England now.
Hello.
She was over there making sure our office in England was okay. Well, she's back, too, so she'll be making comments. But it's our seventh transformation conference. We've been doing it 7 years now, and it's July the 13th to the 15th on that weekend.
In Rogers, Arkansas, at the Embassy Suites.
John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. And all the information about the conference is on our website.
Right.
That's Ozark Mountain, the name of our company, OZARKMT.com, if you want more information about it and how to get reservations. But we started this conference 7 years ago mainly as a showcase for the authors that we publish, because many of these authors have never spoken into audiences or anything, and so it's a way of getting them out there and showing them they can do this. So that was what started as a showcase. Then we always have some keynote speakers too, but we have such wonderful authors that every year we have the new ones that are coming up. So tonight we're beginning this, and it'll go straight through until July. This is one of our new authors, Henry Michelson, and he's written a very interesting and some may say controversial book.
But what's controversial to us?
I mean, to us, nothing is controversial, because we deal with everything. But that's why Don, the one who runs the show, said we can say anything we want, we can talk about anything we want, nothing is censored or limited.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about it. But we always stay with the positive.
Right.
But it's Henry Michelson, and the name of his book is And Jesus Said, A Conversation. I'm going to bring him on in just a few minutes. But consider this about his book. What if it were possible to have a conversation with Jesus and ask him anything you could think of? That would really be an opportunity, wouldn't it? To kind of dispel all of the things we've been taught, all the rumors and the questions surrounding it. Just suppose if it were possible and you had the opportunity to actually speak with Jesus, what would you think of to ask? And that's what this book is about. So we're going to bring on Henry Michelson, and we're going to talk about the book. Henry, are you there?
I'm there, Dolores and Julia. How are you ladies tonight?
We're wonderful.
You didn't run out on me anyway.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Because some of our first-time authors are a little worried when they first get on the show, but believe me, we're gentle with you. And our listeners are all over the world, and they're used to strange topics that we bring up. But the book is And Jesus Said, A Conversation. But first, Henry, I want you to tell people about yourself, your background, and how you came to write this book.
I would, to answer the question or the statement, tell you about myself. I would say I'm pretty much a normal, average person in the sense that I've always been involved in fairly standard types of work throughout my entire career, although I'm now retired. But since I was a child, have always had experiences that, especially as a child, I did not think were unusual, because I think children tend to have experiences, and sometimes in their childlike reticence to tell their parents or other people about those experiences, they may tend to think of them as normal, in the sense that probably everybody else has them too, so it's no use talking about them. At least that was my perspective. And as I got older, I realized those experiences were some manifestations of clairvoyance and that sort of thing. Throughout undergraduate and graduate education, I looked for a variety of insights into the type of experiences that I was having, but really never found any satisfying answers until in the mid-70s, which at that time would put me in my early 30s. I met a lady who I could tell understood not only my experiences, but someone from whom I could learn a great deal. Became her student for several months and learned at that time several methods of meditation. And since that time, have meditated on a very regular basis. The meditations tied directly into how the book started, because eventually as I meditated, I had four or five entities that periodically would join me in meditation. And it wasn't a particularly fantastic experience that these entities would join. It was more as if we were at a park listening to a student musician, let's say, playing the cello, and a few other people just gathered in the park to join us listening to this musician. These other entities sort of were doing some similar types of things that I was doing in my meditation, and it just seemed that they joined me in that process. Their presence wasn't consistent. It would just periodically they would join me, periodically they would not. Sometimes if I did psychic readings for people, sometimes these four or five entities would be present, sometimes they would not. So it was a very casual, open relationship with these entities. And on one particular evening in the summer of 1988, another entity sort of stopped by to visit, if you will, for lack of a better way to express it. And my experience of that entity was, in my mind, that it was much like the other entities, had no physical form. Visually, I experienced them more as some indistinct shape of light, sometimes not even that. But this entity seemed to be, the only distinguishing factor from my perspective was that the entity was a little brighter, if you will. Eventually, over several nights, this entity continued to visit, so I finally thought, well, we've got a new member of the group who wants to join and periodically participate. So I asked this entity if there was a name that I could use to address it, and the entity said, yes, that he was Jesus, the Jesus of Nazareth, of course, now disembodied. And so, okay, thank you very much, I said, and for several weeks, sometimes this entity would appear, sometimes this entity, Jesus, would not appear, just like the group I now refer to as my guys. But on one evening during my meditation, Jesus asked if I would be willing to help write a book. And I thought about it over a couple of days, and eventually said yes. Jesus said he had some subjects that he wanted to address, that he would tell me what those subjects were, and that he would like for me to record the sessions where I would serve as a channel or a repeater as best as I could of what he said. And he said that I would meet someone named Bobby who would help me record those sessions. And I didn't know anyone named Bobby, but to make a long story short, a couple of months later, I met someone named Bobby and reluctantly said, I know this is going to sound strange, but Jesus said I would meet you and that you could help me write a book.
Yeah.
Which is not your normal opener at a party to introduce yourself to someone. To my relief, Bobby had a very private interest in metaphysics and said he would be willing to do it. So over about 6 to 8 months, about twice, sometimes three times a week, we would have usually about four-hour channeling sessions where I would go into a meditative state, connect with Jesus, relate verbally what Jesus said, images that he showed me, that sort of thing. We would record them. Jesus initially laid out a group of subjects that he wanted to address, and then he gave Bobby and I permission to ask additional questions to those basic subjects or basic comments. Of course, during the channeling sessions, I was in no place to ask additional questions. Bobby would. I would take the recordings to a stenographer. Now, that sounds strange to say today, but back in 1988, computers weren't that common. So I took the recordings.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. I took the recordings to a stenographer who transcribed the recordings. Bobby and I would go over that written material, come up with more questions, and eventually that process went on for 6 to 8 months until Jesus declared he was through. I compiled the book in as readable a format as I could and submitted it to a variety of publishers and got no response. And then my career became more active at that particular time. I started traveling a lot in the United States into Europe, took on more responsibilities, and the book literally sat in my garage in boxes until early 2007 when I retired, when I brought it out again, was able to find someone who had a floppy disk drive on a computer, was able to convert it to Microsoft Word. One thing led to another. I submitted to a variety of publishers, and to my good fortune, Ozark Mountain Publishing existed, and you ladies were nice enough to publish the book. So that's a short synopsis of.
Okay. But see, I went through the same thing during the same time period, so I know we had to wait till the rest of the world caught up with us because we were way ahead of our time in the belief system.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to tell people out there that according to your biography here, you have a Bachelor of Science in Sociology and a Master in Theology. So you're very familiar with the Bible, and this is not something you would expect, I think, to bring up something that would contradict what you've been taught. Isn't that true?
That is good insight and very true. I was raised in an extremely conservative religious background, and, of course, the seminary I attended reinforced that conservative point of view. And so it was to say the least, a great surprise when I had these sessions with Jesus, because hopefully I'm not giving away too much in this interview too early, but basically in the book, Jesus contradicts the basic tenets of Christianity.
But I was wondering how you really felt about that whenever it began to come through. Did it shake your belief system?
It did not shake it, because after I finished my degree work at the seminary, I did not follow a normal path of what many of my fellow students did, either into missionary work or pastoral work or that sort of thing. And eventually, as a result of several circumstances, ended up in the logistics industry and in the software industry.
Very mainstream, so, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. Now,
you've been having your experiences all your life, too, so that had to have been telling you there was something else.
Great insight, Julia. Yeah, it certainly broadened my perspective, and as you said, led me to believe in my meditative experiences much more to existence. And even back then, just to say someone meditates, considered by the background from which I came as not acceptable behavior. That's probably changed some, in fairness, but back then that would have been, you know, not normal behavior for the strict conservative evangelical background from which I came.
Absolutely. I remember that. That was like, it took a long time for science to say, it was like a big deal when they said meditation is good for you. You know, it was like, meditation is like the least threatening of anything. It took them forever to accept it.
I remember maybe 20 years ago they came on CNN and said, doctors have said it's very good for you to meditate. Mm-hmm. It's good for your blood pressure and your heart. And I said, well, finally they're admitting it.
Right.
It's good for the body to relax.
Right, that it's not some woo-woo thing, you know. It's
And now they're accepting yoga, and for a long time that was also a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
They're finding out a lot of ways that help the body relax is very good for the person. So I think we've come a long way, and we were just talking about it today, too. We have seen so many changes since I started in this work. I've been doing this work over 40 years. I've seen a lot of changes.
And he has, too, but from the 70s, that's been, any of us that have been active all that time.
And the changes are speeding up. Everything is happening faster.
Right. Interesting enough, from my personal experience, Dolores, the lady that I met that helped me the most back in the mid-70s, that understood more about what I was experiencing than I had the ability to at that time, among other things, practiced past life regressions and took people into past life regressions, which was a very new and interesting experience for me at that time as well. But I've always kind of thought it's interesting that that's where I started, and then lo and behold, the book is published by a lady who has such a long history and tradition and practice in that same field.
I was doing it before it even existed, before anybody else knew about it. So we were out there a long time with the naysayers, I guess you would say.
Well, like you said, the rest of the world had to catch up.
Yeah.
You know?
And now we seem to be, they're all accepting it.
Right.
At my lectures, I'm noticing a great deal of young people who are really getting this. Not like the older generations anymore. So things have changed. Well, Henry, I wrote down some notes from the book that I wanted you to comment on.
Okay.
And I want to tell people, we have published other books where they've tried to explain the Bible and how the errors in the Bible and how they've crept in and all of that. But people know I respect all belief systems, because I believe everyone has a right to believe the way they want to believe, and I'm never out trying to change anything. I just present the information, tell them to examine it, and make up their own minds. So some of the things we're going to talk about, you might say, no, no, that's not the way I was taught. But at least listen to it with an open mind, because we're finding out a lot of it in the Bible is not accurate. Shock, shock.
Yeah, imagine that.
Okay. Henry, I know one thing that probably will be controversial is that you said Jesus said there was not going to be any second coming.
Correct.
You want to comment on that?
Sure.
Okay.
That probably has its foundation. That statement has its foundations with my experience with Jesus, and Jesus stating first of all that he is no more special than any of us in God's sight, and Jesus usually prefers the two words, the source, as opposed to God, although in the channeling sessions he occasionally used the word God, but usually prefers the source. But the main point was that Jesus was saying that he was not special in the sense that traditional Christianity held him in a very special position, that he might be different, he might be more experienced than any of us in certain areas, but that did not make him any more special in relationship to the source than any of us. From that perspective, he moves on to say, therefore, he is not the Savior of the world. He is not God's Son who came to die for our sins, as traditional Christianity states. That's not his role, that he never made those claims in his last existence as Jesus of Nazareth, and that's not who he is. And in addition to that, he did not come back to life after his crucifixion. His crucifixion was not to pay some debt that had to be paid by God's law. His crucifixion was because he did some things that the rulers, i.e. the Roman Empire, didn't like. And the way they usually handled dissidents, especially in a conquered country like the Middle East, was crucifying them. That was the normal way of executing someone. So he was crucified for very, what you might say, are very normal reasons, given that time in existence, given those cultures, those mores, etc. So if he's no more special than we are, if he's not the Savior of the world, if he didn't die to save us from our sins, he also states that he did not come back to life after his crucifixion, after his death. And to finish that, he says, and I'm not coming again. There's no reason for Jesus to come again. As he states, there's God, the source, does not have some grand cosmic theme or plan or program for us where Jesus is going to come back again and separate the good from the bad, and something obviously unpleasant happens to the bad and something really pleasant happens to good. That's just not how existence works. That's not who he was. That's not who the source is. So I've kind of brushed over the very basic cornerstones, if you will, of the Christian religion. And that ends, as you ask, with him coming again to save the world and take those who believed him in him as God's only Son, to some nice place, and everybody else gets to go have real unpleasant experiences for the rest of existence. That, well, none of that is accurate.
Well, Henry, we have published another book called The Healing Christ, and in that book, the man, he was a minister with Unity Church, he has taken every single healing miracle in the Bible and explained how we can do the same things through metaphysics, that there is not, he wasn't doing anything that anybody today can do with metaphysics and training.
Well, and he's always, well, in the scripture he said, these things I can do and you can do and more, you know? So that's what he was trying to say, I'm no better.
Yeah.
You're just like me. Like, he just had more experience. He just knew how to do it, is all. So.
And that was what that is about. Every single healing and miracle in the Bible is explained how it's just through metaphysics we can do the same thing. But Henry, how did he explain people seeing him after he died? He appeared to many people. Did he have an explanation for that?
You know, I don't think that question was ever asked. Part of what I consider the limitation of the book at that time is there were only two humans, myself and Bobby Sanderson, who were asking questions.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, from a question perspective, the book is certainly limited from the fact that we were the only two people thinking of questions, and we never ask about, you know, his later appearances.
But, you know, even in the Bible, he said maybe like a ghost-like, a spirit-like appearance, because he always told them not to touch him.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be just like a spirit appearance to the ones that he wanted to see him.
Right.
Which is, you know, that happens even today.
Yeah, just to jump back to Julia's statements about miracles, there is a section of the book where Jesus basically, to shorten it extremely, said what Julia just said, where Jesus said, yes, I perform miracles. He talked about a couple of those miracles, but basically said that's certainly within the grasp of any of us to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, we do it all the time, but we don't think we can, and so we don't call them miracles, I think. So I think
right,
we have expectations of what a miracle is supposed to be, I think, but we do them all the time.
We have tremendous
and
ability.
I think you hit on it. So many times we unexplain what is really the miraculous, because we have a proclivity to think there's no way we could do something like that. So,
right.
You know, we don't recognize what happens, or we explain away what happens that that we do ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But this is what I keep lecturing about, too, is that everyone has psychic abilities. They just push them down either by their culture, their parents, and they'll say, well, they don't exist. They've all had psychic experiences, so it's normal. But I believe it's coming back, and it's increasing. And people are becoming more aware of these abilities, but they're kind of frightening in some ways. They don't know what to do with them.
Right.
Well, they're more accepted.
Yeah, and in my own case, this book, the phrase coming out is usually used in relationship to gays coming to terms with their own sexuality and publicly expressing those to their family and friends and that sort of thing. This book is sort of, in a sense, my coming out of the closet as someone who has always had these types of psychic experiences and that sort of thing, but was uncomfortable, especially in the traditional workplace, of expressing them. That's usually something that you don't put on your resume. And it's not something listed as
but
a
now
job
you will, won't you? Yeah, you're coming
but
out of
the more I've loosened up and become a little more comfortable, not wearing a sign and shouting as I go down the street, I'm psychic, but just being open to express it when it's appropriate. The back to your comment earlier, the more I begin to realize, gosh, there are a lot of other people like this out here.
Right, right. It's accepted now. So
more and more, yeah. And in a sense, I think of that it's similar to the fact that someone like Mozart at age 12 could listen to a very complex orchestration of music and from memory repeat it and write it. So he had some very, very incredibly unique capabilities as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I might can hum a tune. So I can have a musical experience too, but it still doesn't mean Mozart is better than I am and that he deserves, it just as a human being, that he deserves some type of special recognition and place that any other human being would be. And I think Jesus was the same way. I sometimes think of Jesus as the Mozart of energy. You talked about his healing. He had this, must have had this incredible understanding, naturally gifted use of energy. And as we've been saying, we have it as well. Maybe it expresses itself differently. Maybe it doesn't express itself in the same way. But Jesus says that still doesn't mean he's more special than we are. We all have our place. We all serve our purpose. We're all on our own path. As you said earlier, Dolores, exploring different thoughts and ideas, coming to a variety of conclusions. And it really means we're all more alike than it means we're all different and that some of us are better than others.
There's a caller now. Okay, because I had a few more things we wanted to go into. Means there's a caller on the line. Okay, who's there?
This is Deanna. I'm
calling from
Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. Do you have a question for Henry?
Well, I had a question for you, but now I have a question for Henry, too, because I'm reading right now the one of your books that you published, not one that you wrote, Dolores. And before I go on, I just want to say I think you're just one of the most beautiful people on this planet. And I thank you so much for the work that you have done. You have touched so many of us, and it's an honor to speak with you. But
thank you.
Let me ask a question. I'm reading Power of the Magdalene right now. And in that book, it does say that Jesus was healed and went on to have a life. It names a sister who apparently healed him, and he was able to go on and have another life. And I know that there are a few other sources, I can't think of them right now, that say that Jesus did survive the crucifixion and went on to have a life. So it's so confusing to get so much conflicting information.
Yeah, I know there's many different theories, and you're talking about Stuart Wilson's book.
Yes,
we've published several of his, you know, where him with Johanna Prentice about he has the story that Jesus did survive, although he was very weak, he almost died, and that he was brought back to health, and that he was sent to another country. That's one of the theories, and you know, I put them all out there, and whatever sounds right. So we don't really know.
Well, that's where it kind of fits into that whole multi-dimensional life where you have many different
Henry, what do you think about that?
First of all, caller, did you say, I didn't understand your name, did you say it's Deanna?
Deanna, yes.
First of all, thank you for calling in. I probably tend to side with Dolores and Julia's perspective. I make no claims at all about the book that it is right. In fact, in my own existence, I find it challenging sometimes to find what is right and to rigidly call it like that. And I can certainly identify with your confusion, because there can be, you can read so many different books with so many different perspectives. And so I sympathize with you. You know, this book is my claim is it's my experience with Jesus, but my claim is not that all other experiences are incorrect and this is correct.
It's not the last word, you mean.
I also admit that it can be confusing for all of us when we can read different accounts and get totally different perspectives. And I don't have probably what you would consider to be a very satisfying response to that dilemma, other than to say, I personally just kind of, it's as if I just take a deep breath and just sort of have to grasp or embrace what feels correct for me, or what feels perhaps most true for me, while I also embrace everyone else's right to differ with me. And it's part of the conundrum for me personally of being human and trying to reach out and have some sort of existence and interconnectedness with spiritual dimensions, while also having responsibility that at some point I chose to be in a human body and get to struggle with these kind of things. You know, I wish I could give you a stronger, easier response that would say author X is right and all these others are not, but it's just
well,
that there's
in my
a lot
lectures,
of information out there, and it's our responsibility to sift through it.
Yeah, in my lectures, I'm always telling people to look at everything and ask lots of questions, then make up your own mind what rings true to you. Then you have your truth. Your truth may not be what everybody else's truth is, but it is your truth. And then that truth can change, too. So just be open to anything and just see what happens. That's what I tell people.
Yep, and it's probably, I would be suspect of anyone who told me that this is the only answer. So
good for
you. You have taught us well, Dolores. Can I ask
keep an
the
open
question
mind,
that I originally
anyway.
Called for? I wanted to call and find out about reincarnation, because it seems that your theories and teaching on reincarnation have evolved. The way it was presented, for example, in your first book on Jesus and the Essenes, you say that the soul of man incarnates and it will always inhabit a human body. But in Convoluted Universe 4, you say something totally different.
Well,
so,
that's what I tell
you.
You have to remember, I was writing these books over a 30-year period. And I tell people, if you read the first books I wrote, you can see how I evolved in my own thinking and how I learned as I went along and wrote more books. Because in those early days, that was my truth then. That was what I believed. But then as I got more and more information and wrote more and more books, you can see my evolvement to come up till now. Some people want to read my books in the order I wrote them, and then they can see how I changed my thinking. But that was what I believed 30 years ago when I wrote. That was the first book I ever wrote. So that goes along with the same thing. Your beliefs can change. They can evolve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then in Convoluted 4... what you're saying about experiencing every single aspect of life, being a rock, being a flower, that is more the correct thinking on reincarnation.
Yes, and see, that took many years to come to those conclusions.
Uh-huh.
You can't have it all dumped on you at once. It's too hard for the mind to accept. So I say they give you little crumbs of knowledge and say, here, digest this. Then we'll give you another spoonful of information, digest that, because they have to do it when you're ready to grow and to accept the information. So when people bring up that question, I say, that was my thinking 30 years ago. Now you can see how I've evolved and grown, and I'm still growing. I'm still finding out more and more information. So look at it in that perspective, and I think it'll make more sense.
Oh, I thank you so much, and bless you, both of you, for all your help that you do. Thank you very much.
And thanks for calling in. Okay, that question has been asked before. But we do evolve. We do change. Mm-hmm. He said, if you don't change, you become stagnant. That's what you have to change.
Right.
Okay, Henry, let's talk. You talked about the devil and heaven and hell. And one thing I do like about your book is that it agrees totally with everything I believe. But let's tell them about what Jesus said about the devil and heaven and hell.
After that last statement, can I just have a diploma from Dolores' University and call it quits?
What do you mean?
Well, you said we agree entirely. I feel like I've just arrived some higher plane now.
Okay.
Give me a diploma and I'm happy.
Took me many years to come to the same conclusions you've written about. Anyway, we're on the same page.
Okay. Yeah. Jesus talks about our proclivity as humans to project the way we tend to do life and our thought processes as humans, to project that into the spiritual domain as if how things happen in spirit dimensions are all based on how things happen here. And he actually makes the comparison, I'm roughly paraphrasing, that if you're going to talk about just dimensions as a number, as we humans would tend to say, well, how many of, you know, a baseball player, how many hits do you have and how many outs did you make and how many home runs, and categorize all those things, that there are an uncountable number of spiritual dimensions compared to the physical dimension. And
yes, I agree.
We exercise folly to think that the way we conceive of our physical existence, where there are good people and bad people, where bad people have to be punished and good people receive rewards, that we project our own feelings and our own perspective of human existence onto spiritual dimensions, and it's just inaccurate. It's just folly. And that heaven and hell, some form of bad, powerful entity that at least from the Christian dimension, we call Satan or the devil, and some form of good power that we would call God, that all those are creations of humans in the human mind in an attempt to understand existence, and that it just falls short of what reality really is, that really in reality and in spiritual dimensions, there is no good or bad. There is no heaven or hell. There are no evil spiritual forces at war with the good spiritual forces. That's a projection of our own human warring nature, our tendency to go to battle with each other, even emotionally and intellectually, rather than what we just experienced with the last caller, an attempt to be more inclusive and more supportive and more embracing of each other, regardless of our political opinion or religious opinion, etc. So Jesus basically says there is no heaven or hell. Again, heaven and hell, God and Satan, Jesus as a sacrifice that God requires humans to make because they have so misbehaved. All those are concepts of man's imagination and ideas that human beings have formulated in an attempt to understand the mystery of existence. And they are just that, and they fall short of reality from Jesus' perspective. They really have nothing to do with true spiritual reality whatsoever.
This is what I've found out in my work. They said there is no bad, there is no good. There isn't any devil, but they say everything is lessons. It's experiences and lessons, and what did you learn from that experience?
Right.
It's all to teach us something. And so it's not bad or good. We all experience negative things in our life, but what did you learn from the experience? And many people don't even think about that. There may have been one thing out of the whole experience that they needed to know. That's how.
And one of the things you mentioned, you commented in your comments to Diana about, I think is a theme throughout the book, that Jesus says there is a very strong human tendency to abdicate responsibility, to let the church or ministers or prominent people that, you know, humans would say, oh, that person knows more, they're more important than I am, that we would abdicate our responsibility and let other people make decisions for us and believe what other people have done rather than to do what you suggested earlier and with the last caller to do, and that is that we all search on our own and look for our own truth and see what works best for us. And, oh, by the way, it's going to change over time, and it's going to evolve, and it's going to look different later from what it looks like now. But it's our responsibility to do that. And it's an error on our part to say, well, whatever's happening to me is either the devil's fault or is God doing something to me so I will learn a lesson. A prominent theme is we're all gods and we're all creators, and we are creating by design our own world. The problem is sometimes we're not conscious of that, but just because we're not conscious of it doesn't mean that it's not occurring.
And a lot of things, too, people give up their, when you talk with the priest, they say no one can talk to God except through them.
Right.
And anybody can talk to God. We're not limited that, but they give up too much to the church and to the leaders of the church saying, I'm not worthy.
Right, that's part of it. And then part of it, too, I think people, it probably comes more from the being taught that we're not worthy, but another part is, like you were saying, we have to take responsibility. And if you do, if you want part of it, you have to take it all. So, you know, sometimes it's easier to blame somebody else. Because then you don't have to, you know, that's just the easy way out, and everybody else is at fault. But, you know, this is very, to me, I find this very liberating and empowering when I realize that I'm doing it. But some people, it scares them to all that responsibility and that, oh, I'm in charge here. But
you're creating this.
But I think if they could just shift it just a little bit, they'll see how empowering it is. And you just handed them the world when you let them know that.
Yeah, because
as you
just said, if I'm really responsible, then that means I can change this. I can be responsible to create the difference that I want. Oh yeah, yes, it is.
realize that, then you can change your future. You can change the circumstances because we are great and powerful beings.
Absolutely.
That's right.
We've been pushed down to think we're sinners and we can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. And that whole concept of putting down, Jesus sort of raises a question of who does that serve? Well, it serves best those in, he comments,
in power.
Those positions of power in religious structures, at least in the context of Jesus' discussion about religion, that it serves them best. It puts them in an ultimate position of power, of saying what's right, what's wrong, how do you worship, how do you not worship, where do you worship, what's required to worship, how do you interact with God, what are the right ways, what are the wrong ways, do you have to do it at certain times of the day, in certain buildings, using certain words.
And then also the church brings in a lot of fear.
Yes.
They love to plant fear to keep people under control. If you don't do this, you know, you're going to hell, devil is going to get you, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
God won't talk to you. We try to get people away from fear because that just pulls you down.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, well, we're coming up to the time we're going to have to stop. The hour has gone very fast, I think.
It has.
Very fast.
And you have a lot to say. But if anyone wants to hear more, Henry is going to be one of our speakers at our conference. And it's coming up pretty soon now in July.
2 months.
Yeah, July 13th to the 15th in Rogers, Arkansas. And we're going to have about 12 different speakers.
14.
Mm-hmm. And the majority of them are our new authors who have never spoken before. So it's going to be interesting. I always tell people in my company, I don't publish junk.
Well, I was just going to say that. We were reading each other's minds. I was going to remind people that Dolores is the one that approves what books get done. And so they all have to pass her high standards of, you know, to be published. It's not, they don't, everything stops with her. So, you know, and then it gets passed to the next processes and everything. But she's the one that makes the decisions. And she, you know, like she said, she doesn't publish junk. And
I read hundreds and hundreds of manuscripts. We get submitted all the time. We have stacks of these, and they are read in the order received. I read them all, and then I'm the one that decides which one we think we're going to take a chance on. The vast majority of them get sent back as rejects. So we are very particular about what we do publish.
Right.
And so I think you'll realize that when you look at our catalog and go online and look at our list of books.
Right.
But, yeah, she's right. I'm the one that makes the decision, so if anything goes wrong, it falls back on me.
Well, but a lot of people like that because you have high standards with what you, because you how you write your own books is done with very high integrity. Well, you do the same thing with who you accept, you know, what books you accept to publish. So I think people need to know that.
Well, in the next few weeks, we're going to be interviewing some of our other new authors, and they're going to be speakers also. So I think we're coming up to the top of the hour now, and if anybody wants any more information, check our website for more information about the conference and to check out our books. It's Ozark Mountain Publishing, OZARKMT.com. And Henry's book is called And Jesus Said, A Conversation.
Now, Henry, do you have a website or do you have any way that people can reach you if they want to?
Thank you for asking that, Julia. Two ways. First of all, by email, just henrymichelson@yahoo.com. And then the website is and-jesus-said.com. So not andjesussaid.com. There's a dash between each of the words, and-jesus-said.com. And one of the pages there has information also about the conference as well as my email address. If you would like to contact me, I would be glad to interact with anyone who might have any questions about the book or the content of the book.
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to go. And, Henry, I thank you for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you
very
much.
And we're going to be seeing you very soon.
Excuse me, an opportunity to publicly thank you for publishing my book. I'm very honored to be a part of your stable of authors and look forward
okay.
to the conference. I guess if I'm going to have to stand up and say something, I better start working on that.
Yeah. I think the topic you were just talking about would be fine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Okay. All right. So now we're going to have to go, or Don is going to pull the plug on us here. So I'm thanking everyone for listening tonight, and I hope you enjoyed the show. So good night, everyone.